It's WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan, Mego here with you. No Shime today. He's out sick. T's and P's. Hope he's feeling better wherever he is today as we get ready for the Patriots and the Jets kicking off in about 2 hours from Gillette Stadium. The Patriots and Jets both in the midst of losing skids right now. The Jets haven't won a game since playing the Patriots. Their only other win this season against the lowly Tennessee Titans. The Patriots in the midst of a six-game losing skid right now. Need a win very, very badly. It's their last home game for a little while as well, as they're going to go on the road for a couple of the next 2 weeks anyway before they see Gillette Stadium again. And here for more on that, your friend and mine, NBC Sports Boston pre- and post-game show, and the halftime show as well, Tom E. Curran, joins us here on the airwaves. Hello, Tom E. How we doing?
What's going on, Christian? Hi, Mego.
Nice to have you here, as it was obviously a very, very weird week for the Patriots. A lot of things being said in that locker room. Is there any expectation that this team can shake all that off and focus today on a Jets team that's also very desperate for a win?
That's a good way of putting it. I would say there's more of a hope than an expectation. I think to have an expectation, you have to have recent evidence of competency in different things. And I know that we are very offensive focused, which we ought to be, because that's what sells the tickets. That's what fills the tailgates. That's what keeps Fitzy happy down there at Gillette. But I think
apparently one of
what
many
they have
things
to do is, holy crap, huh? 5,000 chicken pop sliders. But I think that if the Patriots want to be who they insist they can be, they have to stop being disgraced as a run-stopping defense. Regardless of the personnel, regardless of the opponent, they need to somehow figure a way to get off the field more regularly and fewer 4, 6, 8, 12-yard runs.
Tom, one of the things I've been saying this week, but especially today, is that I feel like there is a little bit of a leadership void in the locker room right now because of the injuries, the trades, the off-field issues. I don't know if you agree with that, but if you do, how incumbent do you think it is on Drake May to take the reins there and either be a little bit more vocal or find some way to command in the locker room?
I completely agree. I could not agree anymore, because when you're going to start losing players, who is the most important leader offensively? It's David Andrews. He's hurt. We know that hurt players are not as persuasive or around the team and have as much influence as healthy players. Same goes for Juwan Bentley, the most important leader in the front seven of the defense. And Jabril Peppers, not going to be back anytime soon, it appears. And he's probably the most passionate leader and probably the best performer over the last 2 years defensively. So you've lost all of these voices, and you have in their stead the leading voice leading the wide receiver room, for instance, is Kendrick Bourne. A nice guy, well-intentioned, very happy, but not somebody who's all full of piss and vinegar that's going to make anybody go, oh, no, Kendrick said this, and he's mad. He's not that kind of leader. So, yes, Drake May is really shouldered with a lot of responsibility in terms of having to herd cats with the wide receiver room, be the go-between between the offensive coordinator and the players, figure out his own situation, go-between in terms of this is what he wants and this is what we need to execute, and shoulder his own responsibilities as to learning how to live a post-college life and run a team with high expectations and a voracious fan base. So it ain't easy, but he is. You know what I think, Mego?
What?
Agree with this or not? See what you think. He is more ideally suited for it, perhaps, than any other quarterback that we saw in the draft. I just think his upbringing, his dad being a quarterback, the family where his brothers have all been in high-level athletes, I just don't think he seems very easily daunted.
No, I think he has a natural confidence. I also think it's a little bit of an awkward situation because it only turned over from being Jacoby Brissett's team 2 weeks ago, and he's a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and as much as Jacoby Brissett might individually support Drake May, there's a point at which Jacoby Brissett's like, oh, great, I go to work again today. I'm going to watch the kid play. This team's not very good. What am I doing here? And I'm not saying he's doing that, but there is a work fatigue, I would imagine, that would enter into Jacoby Brissett's role as the whatever mentor, I guess. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just I just kind of like to read it. I like to read into the chemistry type things and try and extrapolate how people would feel in different situations at work. And for Jacoby Brissett, all right, we're 1-7 now. Can you come in and help Drake with this? Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I could see that being not an ideal situation. If Drake May, let's say, Tom, the rest of the season, that May continues progressing and having good games, like the last two games, basically. Let's say you see more of that here in the future, like today against the Jets, against Tennessee and these other teams. Significant losses, but it seems like May is coming around. Is that going to be satisfactory for ownership and everybody else? Because it did seem like coming into this season, the most important thing was Drake May. Not so much wins and losses, but developing and bringing along this rookie quarterback. And for better or for worse, it does seem like he's coming along pretty well.
Absolutely. I think that is vitally important. But I think the more important thing, Christian, is what they're lacking in right now, and that's the foundational culture installation that Mayo talked about. You know, if Elliot Wolf says we want to be less of a hard ass and Mayo wants to have players more empowered and they want the team to be more itself and unencumbered to work the way it wants, well, we're not seeing that. We're not seeing that promote guys who are self-starters, taking on the responsibility, answering the bell. And again, the injuries really, really sucked because it took away a lot of the lieutenants that Mayo could have had as being persuasive. But I think the culture is the most important foundational piece, and then having that quarterback in the right culture. Because look at Matthew Stafford. Look at all of these really good quarterbacks who end up going someplace else that's more stable, or even good quarterbacks. And they never reached their potential at their first stop because it was too messed up. Right now, it's trending towards, unfortunately, messed up. The one thing that you guys pointed out, though, as I was listening, that at least can give you some optimism is they are a team that will have a high draft pick, has had a high draft pick, has an incredible amount of money to spend next year, and should be in a position to do so if the free agent class is, you know, adequate. So you can sit there and say, well, there's brighter days ahead. With the Jets, can you really say there's brighter days ahead when you're spending that much money and you don't have a quarterback? It's hard to do.
Tom, how much do you think that Gerard Mayo would benefit from having some veteran coaching staff around him next year? Assuming that he'll be back next year, maybe having more of a veteran.
Hello, Ben McAdoo.
Play caller. We don't know what Ben McAdoo does.
It's true.
If someone can tell me what Ben McAdoo's job exactly is, I would love to hear it. But some more, I guess, presence, experience in there who can kind of put a hand on his shoulder and say, here's how I went wrong with this in my own experience. Yeah. So don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, Sean McVay had Wade Phillips, for instance, and we can go on down the line of, you know, the coaches who've had somebody with them who was older, more seasoned, had seen things, and could be that go-between. I honestly don't know what the relationship was with Ben McAdoo prior to him being hired. Like, who had it? Did Gerard have it? I would find that hard to grasp. Did Alex Van Pelt at some point in the background? Or did they just say, there's a retired coach who's available, knows some offense, let's get him in here? And again, that becomes a situation where when a staff takes over together, as Bill Belichick's staff did in 2000 with Weiss, Crennel, Belichick, Sealy, all the coaches coming in at the same time, having some shared background, it's much easier. If you bring in Ben McAdoo and he doesn't have this longstanding relationship and has had, you know, hours and hours and hours in the, you know, trenches with you, and he looks at something you're doing that doesn't make sense or that he disagrees with, is he supportive in that instance? If someone doesn't take your advice, is he put off by that? That's why it's hard to just drop guys into a coaching staff and say, here, make a great team together.
All right. Before we let you go here, Tom, the team has been, they were called soft right after that game. I know it was walked back on Monday, but this is their first game since that happened. I know there's not a whole lot of, you know, bleep kickers on this team, but do you think you might see a little bit more edge today, a little bit more, you know, nasty finishing of some hits, things like that for a team that got called out by their head coach a week ago?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, honestly, from my perspective, I don't see them being a team that isn't willing to be physical, generally speaking. I mean, Mayo can call them soft last week, but I think their softness is in literally job execution. And I tried to ask this week to Dietrich Wise, were guys failing last week because they were doing their own thing and getting out of position? Was it technique? Was it fundamentals? Or was it, we just can't beat you? And he kind of talked around that, but I think the bigger problem the Patriots have had is that whole do your job. You got guys freelancing, doing their own thing up front or hoping that something will happen, and they don't have enough history with the guys behind them to say, who can look at what the defensive lineman is doing and say, all right, well, he's doing that, so I'm going to have to do this and tweak my responsibility here. I'll cover his ass. And as a result, it just takes a few plays for it to go south in that realm. So just be more sound. I honestly, pardon me again, I honestly don't want to see a whole lot of finishing hits, grinding guys' helmets into the ground, and picking up 15-yard penalties because you want to prove you're not soft.
Yeah.
Just limit all the runs to 2 and 3 yards and get the hell off the field. That would be a good enough announcement.
All right, final score prediction?
Oh, boy. Let's go with 27-17.
27-17 Jets.
No, that's just the final score. I'm not telling you who.
It's
going to be Jets, Jets, I would expect.
Yeah.
I mean, they have more to play for. They're pissed off, and they have somewhat better skill players right now.
They have a lot more better skill players. Thank you, Tommy Curran. Great stuff as always, and we'll talk to you.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll hear you all week long, of course, with the midday show and with us in the afternoons. Thanks so much for the time today.
Very good. Goodbye, Bego.
All right. That is Tommy. What am I, the Mirage over here? Tommy Curran joining us.
I'm a Mirage now. I got to go.
NBC Sports Boston. Mego, beat it. Get out of here. It's been great having you, but you got to get down to Foxborough. Get ready to cover this game. Patriots and the Jets kicking off at 1 o'clock. We're going to have inactives for you coming up at 11:30. In the meantime, it's just me for the rest of the show. We'll have Wiggy's Keys coming up in a little bit. We'll talk with Andy Hart as well. And your phone calls at 617-779-7937. What do you think about this game? Do the Patriots have a chance? Are they a soft team? Do you agree with Gerard Mayo, at least what he had to say initially, or do you think it's going to be just another ugly loss here in a season full of them? All of that on the table. We can talk about it with you again at 617-779-7937. First, here's Jacob Lastner to tell you what's trending. All right, we're a couple of minutes away here from getting the inactives for the Patriots today. We know that Jalen Polk's not going to be out there. Jalen Polk will not be playing today. He's in the concussion protocol. It's a little bit from Mike Reese about this, and it may not be great news depending on where you land on this whole thing. It's WEEI Football Sunday, by the way. Arcand here, the last man standing. 617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to jump in. We'll get the phone calls in just a moment. But with Polk out, Javon Baker may see some time today. He may not. He had a hiccup in London last week when it came to following part of the team's itinerary. He was inactive for the third straight game. Would like to see him out there if he can pull his head out of his, you know, I mean, really, like, this guy doesn't seem like he's really ready to be a pro football player. And then there's this. Tyquan Thornton's return with Baker yet to break through and fellow rookie Polk out this week with a concussion. The Patriots are trending toward having Kendrick Bourne, K.J. Osborne, Pop Douglas, Kayshon Booty, and Tyquan Thornton as their five available receivers today. It will mark a return for Thornton, the 2022 second-round pick who's been a healthy scratch the past 2 weeks, but whom Mayo said would be on the game day roster this week. Tyquan has a high football IQ and understands the spacing on the field, said Tyler Hughes. We talk in our room that when we run our routes, we need to do so to get other people open sometimes. Tyquan understands how our concepts fit together. He's a good team player in that regard. I mean, okay. He hasn't been out there for a couple of weeks, but fine. Drake May referred to that concept last week of a love of the game route, receiver going hard even if he knows the ball is likely not coming his way. call me crazy, but if you're putting Tyquan Thornton out there just to run a bunch of love of the game routes, can't anybody do that? Like, is that an important thing? I know he's fast and he can run straight ahead, but can you put the ball up there for him and see if he can come down with it? Like, is that, he's a second round pick and this may be the last chance you have, but yeah, I guess we'll see. There was also this in Reese's thing today, and it was the ninth of the 10 bullet points that he had, and it was Kraft's approach. And it says, despite a six-game losing streak, Robert Kraft struck a patient tone last week in London as it relates to Mayo and some of his and the team's growing pains. He says, little things make a difference, Kraft said. We had to change everything from 2023. I think they're making good progress, and I love the chemistry in the locker room. I love the chemistry in the locker room? Has he been in that locker room? Like, how can you love the locker room right now? How could anyone say that? How could anyone say I love the chemistry in the locker room? They're openly defying their coach. They're pointing fingers after every loss. It's the offense and the defense. And it's not like they're pointing fingers at each other. Defense is mad at the defense. This is what Evan Lazar said. Offense is mad at the offense. Everyone's sort of mad at each other. They're questioning the coaching staff. They're questioning the decisions and the play calling. What is there to like about this locker room right now? That's a wild, wild take from the owner. Everything had to change from 2023. Okay, don't know. Everything had to change. I love the chemistry in the locker room.
Liar.
I mean, I don't know if he's lying, but maybe he just doesn't go in there very much, you know? Maybe he just hasn't been in the locker room much. I heard that him and Jonathan went down to the locker room after the Jacksonville game. He loved what he saw in that locker. I mean, that seems hard to believe. That was a locker room that produced a head coach who walked out to the podium and called his team soft. How was the chemistry in there right before that happened? How was the chemistry after that happened? How was the chemistry at all this week? That's quite a statement. And this all happened at a fan event the night before the loss to the Jaguars. Okay, so we wouldn't have been in there for that. It was at a fan event the night before they lost the game. So fine. But were things going really well leading into that game? Like, did you look at that and say, yeah, this seems like a team where everything's very cohesive and together right now? No. It's the opposite of that, unfortunately. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to the phones here. A lot of you waiting patiently to chime in on the Patriots, including Jay in North Carolina, who's been waiting the longest. Go ahead, Jay.
Arcan, good points. You're making good points.
Thanks,
today,
Jay.
Son. But I tell you,
thanks, Dad.
You got lobster up there. We don't have lobster down here. I'm so jealous. But I tell you, I didn't cry when Tinkerbell died, and I didn't think Bambi was a real story. Mm-hmm. But on any given day, one professional team can beat another. And I'm sure as hell hoping that this is the day the Patriots show some spunk. Maybe Drake May will take over the team.
Maybe he will, Jay. I think he already kind of has, if we're talking about something to root for. I mean, I don't know if he's commanding the locker room or anything like that yet. He probably isn't. He's 22 and he's only played 2 games. But he is so far the only guy who's been leading with any kind of example. By the way, as far as that any given Sunday stuff goes, you know, I think they used that up in week one. I'd say it's probably over after that. That was their one any given Sunday. Hey, any team can go out there and win the game. That was it. That was that Bengals game. I don't know if there's another one of those left on the schedule. I hope there is. I'd like to see him beat the Jets today. I think this team desperately needs a win, and I also think it's better for Drake May, even if it means they get bumped out of the number one overall pick. It's better for Drake May to experience a couple of wins this season. I agree with that, too. But do I expect it? Am I betting on it? Hell no. 617-779-7937. Tim's in Hanover. Go ahead, Tim.
Good morning, guys. Mego, you're so right about McAdoo. The only McAdoo I knew was the basketball player. But anyway,
here's
what we got
right,
for today. Yeah, let's get it open, right? We got to go trips wide, wide, wide. We got to get everybody up on the line because I'll tell you what, May can see. He's got everything in front of him. That way we're taking the pressure off him in reality. They can take a back, have him go out of the backfield, whatever we have to do. But this will open up that game because May can run. If he sees the pressure, he's got a wide open field. And they're going to have to watch whoever they're covering as they go. Use our speed to beat their slowness. Let's see what happens. If not, if this don't happen, I'm all over the Jets.
Yeah, Tim, listen, I think a lot of people are all over the Jets. That is a 7-point road favorite. And, you know, this year I was listening on the way in to Boomer and Valenti. And something about these road favorites, the road favorites win every single week. Like, you don't, you have like some certain laws that you go by when you're betting on football. Home dogs. Ah, I love a home dog. Not this year. Not this year. The home dogs this year have not been doing well. And there's a reason why they're dogs at home. I mean, that's a perfect example of this right now. This is a Patriots team that does not play well at Gillette. They have won one game there in the last 2 years. It has been a house of horrors at Gillette Stadium. It really has. It's been tough to watch this team play at home. And this is a Jets team, again, that I think has lots of issues, to be sure. They're a team that I remember the Jets last year with Zach Wilson. They might have been better last year with Zach Wilson than they are this year with Aaron Rodgers. Seriously. They played defense last year.
The Jets have scarred me for life, Arcan. I don't think you understand.
They ran the ball last year better. I know that Hall's having a decent season. But defensively, they'd go out there. Wilson would throw his little dink and dunk passes. And that's it. Aaron Rodgers, what made him so good all the time was the fact that he could get around, he could escape the rush, he could extend the plays, and then he could make ridiculous throws all over the field to whoever happened to be out there. He's not doing that this year. And the offensive line may not be as good. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the Jets did take some steps in the offseason to address that offensive line, and they did need to. I thought the Jets had a good offseason in general. I mean, I thought that they went out and did things that were important to do to support an aging quarterback who's still good and still got something left in the tank in his last couple of years before he retires. Here's the problem is that defensively, they can't stop the run anymore. Every team runs on them, and they're not forcing any turnovers. And that was a big part of why they were able to win, what, 7 games last year with Zach Wilson? Like, listen, he's not good. I don't think Wilson's a good player. He's in Denver right now. He's like the third stringer if he's even still on that team. And that team was a little bit more, they were able to put something together a little bit more than this team does. And I don't know exactly how that happened. I don't know exactly what happened with the Jets that made that defense fall apart like this year. But they are a shell of their former selves. And this is a Jets team, by the way, that, yeah, they're spending a lot of money, but you'll remember. We got the inactives ready? Is that what you're talking about? All right, very good. Inactives are out, and here they are. For the Patriots, Jalen Polk, out. Joe Milton, out. Kyle Duggar, out. Josh Uche, out. Laydon Robinson, out. Daniel Equale, out. Two things jump out right away. Number one, Duggar, not great. We already took a look at what the safety situation is going to be like now without Peppers out there. We know that. You already have an extra dose of Jalen Hawkins. With Duggar out, that means I think you have to start Marte Mapu, don't you? Marte Mapu is probably going to be your starting strong safety. Unless they want to put Brendan Schooler in there. Or the kid, the one defensive player that they drafted this year, whose name is Pettis, right? Dale Pettis? Yeah, or him. Or no, not Pettis. Dial's the kid they drafted. Who's Pettis then? Was he undrafted? Either way, you know, that may be what you're doing here. Yeah, I think he was an undrafted free agent. So there you go. You have an undrafted free agent, Brendan Schooler, who's mostly a special teams guy, or Marte Mapu, who, in fairness, has been somewhat productive in the 3 games that he's played in this year. He's got a sack. He's got a couple of pass deflections. I think he's got a half a sack. I don't know exactly, but he's got a bunch of tackles, and he's made some plays out there, and he's going to have to be your guy. It's going to have to be next man up. So here it is. Jalen Hawkins and Marte Mapu. There's your two guys at safety. One name you didn't see on that list, Javon Baker. Looks like Javon Baker's getting a uniform this week. I'm a little surprised by that. You a little surprised by that, Jacob? I thought, and based on what Reese was writing, that he was probably going to be another inactive this week and that Thornton was going to get all those snaps. He may not play, but they're going to have him in uniform at the very least.
I mean, I like the call. He was really electric in college. I mean, I had a friend over at UCF who really loved the way that he played, but it just seems like the off-field stuff is gonna be what holds him back. But it's good to see him in the lineup. I mean, they have to at least give him one chance here to succeed.
We'll see. We'll see if he actually gets on the field. But that's interesting. Considering the fact that there was a problem with him in London, that he skipped out on part of the itinerary or whatever, isn't that... If you're one of his coaches, aren't you just like, come on, man? Like, you've been an inactive for the last 3 weeks. do you want to get out there and play or not? Like, does this matter to you? Do you even care? You're going to go out there and disobey team rules? And I know, listen, it's not Belichick where you get shipped out of town if you do it enough times. It's the Gerard Mayo kinder, gentler experience, but come on. You know, you're inactive. You've been inactive, scratched for 3 weeks, and he's not injured. And now you're going out to England there, and they need wide receivers. There's a flu or this bug going through the locker room, and you're not available. You're skipping out on the team itinerary, whatever that even means. I don't even know what that means. Is a bed check? He wasn't there. I have no idea. But he's getting a uniform today, so there you go. Josh Uche, by the way, it's probably going to hurt his trade value as he is out with an injury. And Daniel Okwale, who we knew was questionable to go. There was a note from him or about him in Reese's stuff today. Okwale ailing. He has an expanded workload that's caught up to him since Thursday when he strained his oblique at practice. He was held out of Friday's practice. He's questionable if he can't go. The options to fill in next to Devon Godchow are Jacqueline Roy, Eric Johnson, and Jeremiah Farms. Jacqueline Roy, who has 2 sacks this year somehow, despite no one knowing where he came from or how he got here. 617-779-7937. John's in the car. Go ahead, John.
Christian.
Yo.
Yo, I got to take a quick detour. Those comments from Bob Kraft, like, it's so ridiculous when we have to listen to this stupidity from the Patriots. Like, we talk about Sam Kennedy all the time and being like Kevin Bacon from Animal House, but it's truly like the Patriots who are the masters of spin control, because that's absolutely silly that we're going to be fed that by Stacey James and Robert Kraft. But to Gerard Mayo and everything this week, like, I think you have to look at sometimes like people's strengths and figure out whether they're, you know, judge them on their strengths and try to figure out long-term if that's going to like pay out. And supposedly Gerard Mayo was brought here to be like this leader of men because he had this great experience with Optum.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what his minor problem was he got sold a bill of goods and he thought he was going to have a lot more control over his team than he did. And he doesn't. And now he's got no control over this team. And you think that he's supposed to be this great leader and he's got no leadership in the clubhouse or in the locker room. And you think, how is this going to like look good in 3 years when he has more control supposedly over the team? And I just don't see what he's going to bring if he can't control the team. Like right off the bat, who cares if they win or lose? Like, you can't keep the team locked in week to week. Like, I'm sorry, you're a middle school teacher that has no classroom management.
Yeah, John, listen, I mean, this has not been a great start or an auspicious start, you would say, for Gerard Mayo in terms of establishing a culture. The wins aren't there. The talent's not there. You'd think he'd be able to at least keep things somewhat on kilter. And it's not happening. Simple as that. It seemed like there was something there. And that Bengals game now feels like it was 10 years ago, doesn't it? Oh, my God. That game, Gatorade bath, take him to the hill. They had Saiyans all picked out. Guys were all excited. Guys seemed like they were really excited to play for Mayo. Mayo seemed like he was in control of that locker room. And it seemed like there were 53 guys in there who were ready to follow him out to war. And no one believed in him. And yeah, you know, no one believes that we're any good, but we're going to show you. We're going to surprise people week in and week out. And boy, did that fall apart quick. You get that as a start. You get that kind of jump start and then have it fizzle out in a matter of weeks. I mean, really, it was 2 weeks later and all of a sudden it was just completely gone. It was off the table. And I don't know exactly what to attribute that to. I don't know exactly where you pinpoint it. I think part of me, deep down, kind of feels like if they had gone to Drake May in week two or week three and had that to sort of tide everybody over, right?
Could have won the Seahawks game as well with Mayan.
Might have won that Seahawks game. You might have won the Dolphins game. You know, you might have 2 extra wins now that you don't have. And even if you lost those games, right? Even if you went out there and you ended up losing those games, at the very least, you can say, hey, we've got our best guys out there. We got the wide receivers, you know. I know you're not seeing the ball much, and you didn't see it much in those first couple of games, but now we got our guy out there. He should be able to hit you. And if he can't, well, you know, suck it up. This is the best that we got, and we're trying to bring him along. He's a rookie. What do you want? You know, those type of things are all a little bit easier to take when it's the rookie out there and not Brissett, who, God bless him, was just not able to run the offense and not able to get rid of the ball on time. And it's, you know, simple as that. I don't think it's a coincidence that the offensive line looks better now that May's out there. He gets the ball out faster. He makes quicker decisions. Jacoby Brissett holds on to the ball. And while he may have better instincts when it comes to running away from the rush, the offensive line hasn't really gotten that much better. It's just May's a little bit more decisive. He's got a little bit more touch. He's a little less afraid to take a shot down the field when it's his first read. And that's really what it's all about. You know, I think Brissett was just so conscious of making a mistake and turning it over that he'd go through his progressions longer than maybe he would otherwise. And a guy who was a little bit more or a little less risk-averse, like Drake May, is able to say, "Now, you know what? I see Booty down there. It's one-on-one coverage. He might not be open now, but I'll throw him open and I'll hit him in the end zone. I'll hit him down that sideline. I'll make that throw. I don't get this double coverage. I'll put the ball where it needs to go." And I think that makes a big difference when it comes to the way this offense operates. And certainly when it comes to guys like Booty and Douglas and whoever else thinking they don't get the ball enough. Now, interestingly enough, despite all of that, these last 2 weeks, the wide receivers have been chirping louder than ever. And it's like, you got your quarterback, guys. What else do you want? There's not really much else we can do here, okay? Van Pelt's the offensive coordinator. Drake May's the quarterback, and you guys are the wide receivers, and this is what it's going to look like. So, you know, either get in line or shut the bleep up or trade some of these guys out of here. That's sort of what I meant with the whole addition by subtraction thing. These guys finally got their quarterback, and they're still complaining. They're still going and chirping about getting the ball more. It's like, come on, guys. It's one thing when it's Brissett and you have another guy you can put in. The other guy's in now, and you still running your mouth like, geez. It's hard for me to imagine that this is all positive stuff when it comes to Drake May's development. It just doesn't seem like it. If there was just one guy, you know, you felt like was okay, he's all about the season, he's all about the team, he's all about, you know, connecting with Drake May and making that the focal point, it doesn't seem like any of those guys have that first and foremost on their mind. What they have on their mind is, why am I not getting the ball more? And they've said that to every reporter who will listen in that locker room. Despite what Patriots Unfiltered may have you believe. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, we'll hear from Coach Jermaine Wiggins with Wiggy's Keys. All right, just about time for Wiggy's Keys. Before we do that, some other inactives around the NFL that may interest you or may not. Travis Etienne, running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, out. That means probably another big Tank Bigsby day for the Jags, who are in action today against the Green Bay Packers in Jacksonville. Love Green Bay in that matchup, but we'll see. We'll see how that all works out. By the way, as a texter who's chirping me about home dogs, I didn't say they always lose, but they're 12-23 this year. Home dogs are 12-23 against the spread. I don't even know what the number straight up is. But against the spread, the home dogs are 12-23 so far this season, which means, you know, listen, it's, you might hit one once in a while, but the whole idea of, yeah, you know, hammer those home dogs so far this season has not been a fruitful one, no matter what happened this past week, Thursday and Monday. I know there's a couple of wins for home dogs, but they have been on the rare side this year is the point I was making. Either way, that's neither here nor there. A couple other inactives for you. T. Higgins out this week. He's been hot. Mike Evans out. Alan Lazard for the Jets, not going to be playing today. Marlon Humphreys out. Justin Simmons, the safety. Will Levis is not playing today. And also Legarius Sneed will be out as well. Levis is out. That means Mason Rudolph is going to be in the game for the Tennessee Titans when they take on the Detroit Lions. This game in Detroit, it's a big, big number. I want to say 11.5, right? 11.5, 12, something like that for Detroit. I think it's one of the biggest lines of the week. And not that I think Will Levis is any good, and they also just traded DeAndre Hopkins, but Rudolph may actually be better for him. You know, Rudolph may be able to go in there and put up some points there against the Detroit team that doesn't have Aiden Hutchinson, but I don't think it's going to matter. I still think
minus 12, by the way,
blow this team out. It's a 12-point line, and that's, you know, the only line that's even close to that is Denver, Carolina. And Denver, Carolina, we'll get to this when we do our picks, but that's another one. I mean, Carolina, they couldn't possibly suck enough. And Andy Dalton got into a car accident. So it's Bryce Young again this week. So, yeah, I like Denver a lot there, along with Detroit against Tennessee. A couple of teams with opponents whose quarterback situations are just really, really bad. And that's one thing you can say about the Patriots is their quarterback situation is not bad. It's the one thing about the team that's not bad. And now with his keys for the game against the Patriots, for the Patriots, against the New York Jets today at 1 o'clock, here's Coach Wiggy.
Key number one, got to be able to run the ball early.
Okay. Run the ball early. That is a common key here with Wiggs. I agree that you need to be able to do it, but I'm not sure that this team can do it. I'm not sure that that's really part of this team's repertoire right now. Now, it should be, because the Jets don't have a good run defense. The Jets' run defense has been very suspect all season long. I think that if you're going to run it against anybody, this is probably the team you want to try that out against. But I also thought that last week against Jacksonville. I thought Jacksonville was a team that you could run on. They could not. They could not run on Jacksonville, and that was with Stevenson back. They eventually just gave up on it. You know, they only ran 15 times. And it still seemed like too much. The way that this offensive line is run blocking, the way that these running backs are sort of tap dancing in the backfield, I don't feel great about them doing that. But I do agree with Wiggy that it is a key to the game. It is something that you have to be able to do with some sort of effectiveness if you want to run play action. I think you're going to see Drake May throwing the ball a lot here regardless if they establish the run or not, but it is something that they have decided as their personality as a team, and they're going to go out there and continue to try and do no matter how little it's working. All right, what's key number two?
Key number two for me is I want to see them take some shots deep downfield with Drake May.
I'd like to see that too, and I think you are going to see that. I think that that has now become the main driver of this offense. What else could it be? It's not the run game. It's not the short game. You're not even really seeing much of a short game. You know, we all expected when Brissett was out there, you're going to see a ton of screens. You're going to see all this creative movement in the backfield, bubble screens, tight end screens, things like that. And you did see a little bit of it, but not really that much. And once teams got wise to it and wise to the idea that he wasn't going to take shots downfield, it became very easy for them to defend. Now, I wonder if the inverse of that's maybe on the table here today. Because the Jets are a good secondary. I mean, there's good players in that secondary. Guys who are smart, guys who are good coverage corners, ball-hawking safeties. Like, they have guys back there who I think are probably as good of a group of secondary players as Drake May has seen so far. Houston, that's a good front. Not a great secondary. Jacksonville is not either a good front or a good secondary, and he took advantage of that. But this is a good secondary here that the Jets have. And I wonder how that's gonna work out for May, if he's still going to be taking those 50-50 shots down the field. I hope he does. I hope he does, because I think that's become the only way for this team to pick up any yards and to score any points. And, yeah, if you want to win this game, you're going to have to continue to do that. What is key number three?
And the third key, I want to see them put pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Make Rodgers want to throw that ball early. Put pressure on him. Send the blitz. Get a lot of people in his face, because I think he'll make mistakes. And those are my keys.
All right. Thanks, Coach Wiggy. That was Wiggy's keys to the game. And that last one, I think, is vital. That last one is about as important as anything that there is. I mean, listen, I think May's going to be fine. You know, so far he's looked good going down the field and taking shots. I think the running game is a question mark, but something that can be covered up by a good QB game. This defense, going back to the emotional roller coaster with Mego early on here in the show, I peg the defense is my main thing. That's the main thing I'm scared of. That's the main thing I'm concerned about. My biggest area of concern for the Patriots today is that defense. If they let Rodgers run around and do whatever he wants to all the time, like they did in that first game, then this is going to be over pretty quickly. This game will be over at halftime. If they can put some pressure on him, if they can send the blitz in a way that's exotic and disguised and something that he doesn't immediately recognize and pick apart because he sees where the weakness is, that's another part of this. Jerod Mayo is certainly not Bill Belichick when it comes to scheming up a defense. We'll see what he ends up being in terms of a head coach, but right now I thought this was going to be his thing. Well, at least Mayo worked under Bill all those years. He'll have an idea of how to scheme up these defenses, how to take guys away, how to disguise coverages, how to disguise blitzes, all that sort of stuff. He'll get creative with it. He played. He knows how it works. DeMarcus Covington, I haven't seen it from these guys. I haven't seen it yet. Even in that Bengals game, you just weren't seeing a ton of pressure, and you haven't seen any since then. And that's a problem. This is a decent secondary now, missing their two safeties as Duggar's out today. And so you got Marte Mapu back there with Jalen Hawkins. But for Gonzalez, Jonathan, and Marcus Jones, those guys are good. They can only cover for so long. You've got to put some pressure on these quarterbacks. You didn't do it on Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence didn't see the turf once, I don't think. Stroud, same thing. Brock Purdy, come on. And Rodgers the first time. Geno Smith, you were not putting pressure on these guys. You are not getting to them. And after being called soft, and I know it wasn't necessarily the pass rush that was being called soft, it was more the run defense. But you know what? The pass rush has been pretty soft lately, too. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Defensive ends? What are you going to do about it, Keon White? What are you going to do about it, Dietrich Wise? You going to go out there and make a play or what? Yeah, you know, I think this is the time to see that happen. This is Aaron Rodgers. It's a Jets team that's spiraling right now. You have a chance to go out there and right some of these wrongs. Go do it. And there you go. Those are Wiggy's keys to the game. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. We'll come back and reset on what was a wild week here for the New England Patriots, both in the building, on the field, and among the beat writers and media contingent, which had me, listen, Friday was one of my favorite shows of all time. That was the most fun I've had on the air here in a while. Also, we'll be joined at 12:30 by Andy Hart, my comrade there in WEEI Afternoons. That's all coming up in the final hour, WEEI Football Sunday.